This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's podcast has to do with a very, very important series of diseases of the intestine. They are called inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD, and under the rubric of IBD come two major illnesses, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. These diseases are taking a major toll in the United States and across the world. It almost seems as if their incidence is increasing. And what's particularly concerning is that they don't just affect aging adults. They often afflict very small kids. Something's happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear in terms of the causation. Maybe, just maybe, it has something to do with our Western diets and lifestyles. Today, we're going to talk to an expert. He's Dr. Melvin Grovet. Dr. Grovet was formerly adjunct associate research scientist and a clinical nutritionist at Columbia University Medical Center. And he was originally trained as a podiatrist, and he received major accolades in that career, having headed major programs and performing as a podiatrist. But he has a life interest in the field of nutrition, which he's pursued. He's become accredited in nutrition via the Certification Board for Nutrition Specialists, CBNS, which is a group that also has certified me. And he has lectured extensively on nutrition. Now, he doesn't so much practice podiatry, but he practices clinical nutrition. He's currently in private practice integrating clinical nutrition into the management of diverse clinical disorders. But his mainstay, his interest professionally is in dealing with inflammatory bowel disease, and in particular, working with kids. And so I wanted to talk to him about some of his very fascinating work. Dr. Grovet, Mel, it's a pleasure. Mel, of course, we're professional colleagues. We've attended many meetings together. I've known Mel for too many years to count. So it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
It's my pleasure, Ron.
Okay, so, well, first of all, you know, maybe to give us the flavor of this, tell us about the first patient with Crohn's disease that you treated. Can you give us a case history on that patient?
Sure. The patient was a 17-year-old male who had abdominal pain literally for 24/7, 15 to 20 bowel movements a day, 3 or 4 projectile vomiting episodes during the day, which resulted in electrolyte imbalance, dehydration, fetid odor in defecating and passing gas, inappropriate stooling. Patient would go to bed at night, have a bowel movement in bed, go walking down the street and have an involuntary bowel movement. But subsequently, the patient lost about 45, 48 pounds and went into actual energy failure. Now, when I describe energy failure, I'm talking about somebody that's lying in bed and doesn't have the energy to lift an arm or a leg.
And the concern was, this is a person who was actually destined to undertake a medical career, and this was a severe impediment to their professional aspirations.
It was. And the diagnostic investigation that went on with this patient was he had a multi-locus intestinal stenosis, which involved 70% of his small bowel and 50% of the large bowel.
So for a listening audience, stenosis is a sort of a clamping down, a narrowing, and a very serious complication. That sounds like Crohn's disease, fairly typical, right?
That is typical of Crohn's disease. And then acute obstruction resulted. He had a limited bypass procedure. Three feet of intestine were completely solid. There was no lumen in the bowel. Food did not pass through this, and that was the forerunner, the forerunner of vomiting. So the subsequent obstruction necessitated extensive intestinal resection, resulting in short bowel syndrome.
And for a listening audience, break in if you don't mind. Ulcerative colitis can be definitively treated with surgery. You remove the colon. That's not a great choice, but at the very least, that can sometimes stop the disease in its tracks. But with Crohn's disease, you can slice and dice, progressively shortening the intestine, but it doesn't cure the disease, right?
No, it doesn't. And even surgically with ulcerative colitis, you're still probably going to be dealing with pouchitis. And so there are other issues that develop with inflammatory bowel disease. So the evolving presentation in this patient was that he had significant, no matter 10 or 15 renal calculi, kidney stones that passed, multiple attacks of gout, three different kinds of delirium that took several years to figure out. He had bacterial overgrowth that was recurrent. Subsequently, as a result of that, there became significant mineral malabsorption. Eventually, as happens many times, the gallbladder became involved, and so the gallbladder was surgically removed. Mm-hmm. And this patient lives today with metabolic acidosis, which is a very serious complication of this whole thing, and, of course, metabolic bone disease that is a complication that occurs over time.
Mm-hmm. So what was the fate of this patient in terms of the outcome? Sounds like a pretty dire prognosis.
Well, the prognosis came this way. At 17, perhaps you should not consider going to college. They laid it on the line for this patient because there was a very real possibility that this patient was going to pass away. And so the prognosis was you may not live to 21. At 19, this patient was threatened by this disease in a life-threatening manner. He was in the hospital for over 6 months. And eventually, time passes by. You see another doctor. That doctor says, you're lucky to be alive, yada, yada, yada. The last consultation said, what are you complaining about? You shouldn't be alive. That's what the patient was told. So to make a long story short, that's my medical history.
Wait a minute.
Do you want to know how that comes out?
Yeah, right. So that's the big reveal, is that that patient was you at 17, and I don't want to out you, but your age is considerably past the age of 17. So we're talking about quite a few decades have transpired since then. If you've managed to have a magnificent medical career, surely you haven't lacked energy, and you've become actually a healer in regard to the very condition that literally threatened your life.
You know, some people in life are very cautious about revealing their age. But in this day of unsafe information, I'm very proud to tell you that I'll be 82 on my next birthday.
So there was
some mistake along the way as to what a person can do to improve their lot in life, no matter what the condition is.
And let me just share with our listeners that I know Mel, and I've seen Mel quite a few times. And recently, I just marveled at his vitality. He's an octogenarian, but he walks with a spring in his step. He's mentally acute. Can talk you around the table in terms of his nutritional expertise. So there's no vestige of any kind of of physical or mental impairment. And you're actually a better specimen at 82 than the vast majority of people who never experienced that horrendous beginning.
Truthfully, I think I feel better today than I felt 25 years ago.
Yeah. Wow. So that's okay. So now, after the big reveal, how did you get there? How did you turn this devastating state of affairs around?
Well, there are just so many times you can listen to people tell you you shouldn't be here. And so I decided to see if I led a clean life, no alcohol, I exercised, I formulated a diet that would work for me. The world famous Leon Ginsberg told me he gave me back my life, but he doesn't know how to feed me. So when a man like that says, I don't know how to feed you, it makes you want to understand how you go about correcting that lack of information. So I personally became the lab rat to study the effects of different foods and different nutraceuticals to see if I could modulate the expression of this illness. And over time, I saw that there were multimodal approaches to improving the quality of life and improving the inflammatory markers and the resolution of this illness. And until a child was carried into my office by her father, who had tears in his eyes, and a mother who was crying, this was like a scene out of Lourdes. I was just, you know, giving people advice. It wasn't something I was conceiving of transferring to other people. But this child made me think in 20 seconds or less, you're either going to get on board and help this kid and others, or you really need to lock the door. And basically, that's what went through my mind in those 20 seconds. And I realized I can't walk away from this. Now I've got to step up front. And whatever the criticism is for the lack of traditional scientific exploration, I'm just going to have to take the heat as long as I can make people better and not make them worse.
And that's got to be really challenging because, you know, I as a an MD, experience a lot of pushback for attempting nutritional cures for patients with IBD. You, with a background in podiatry, you know, a lot of people might be saying, well, you know, what does a foot doctor have to contribute to the management of patients with an intestinal disorder? And yet you made clinical nutrition your specialty.
Basic science has no prejudice as to whether you're a podiatrist or a physician. That science is the science, and if you have the intelligence and the desire to wade through that science, you can see things that perhaps other people don't appreciate.
Indeed.
I've been told many times that, for as an example, curcumin, I've been told many times that there's no evidence. And one day I took a gastroenterologist who I was with, and I asked him the question, what do you think about curcumin for an adjuvant for some of these kids that have inflammatory bowel disease? And his first comment was, Mel, there's no evidence. So I took him to my computer. I went to the National Library of Medicine. I punched in curcumin. And at that time, there were 3,500 articles. A year or two later, there were 5,700 articles. Today, there are 11,000 articles on curcumin. And my only response to him was, you know, the evidence is that you haven't read one.
Indeed. Yeah. And that's what, you know, we'll often hear is that, well, you know, if there were scientific studies, then, you know, we'd all be using it just like conventional medicines, as if there aren't any scientific studies. It's just, you know, looking for them.
There's plenty of science out there. You have to read it to understand that it's there. So to have to read it, you have to have an inquisitive mind and a willingness to learn some of this. And I can understand how doctors feel today. You know, they are being pushed to examine patients in a very short period of time. And I don't care who you are, these illnesses take time. They take time that you have to explore with patients. I have spent up to 4 or 5 hours a day that I put aside because I interview every patient before they come to me so that I know how much time I need to put aside. I've spent 4 or 5 hours with patients. I still do. because if they're sick enough, they deserve my time. I have patients coming to me from all over the world. If you look at the internet, you'll see they come from Abu Dhabi, from Israel, from Egypt, from Paris, from Sweden. I mean, these are sick people willing to come halfway across the world because we have been able to show that nutrition matters in inflammatory bowel disease.
Well, absolutely. Okay, folks, let's pause as usual to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman for a suite of professional-grade products from Protocol for Life Balance, which play a central role in helping support optimal immune function. MyCell Immune Plus, Vitamin C 1000 Plus Zinc 15, and Vitamin D3 in a variety of potencies and delivery systems, liquid, chewable, and soft gels. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Melvin Grovet. So what is the secret sauce when it comes to diet? I mean, what was the type of diet you pursued? We often talk about the specific carbohydrate diet. We, in the past, when she was alive, interviewed Elaine Gottschall, who's very influential in this field, and others who've undertaken research on the SCD. Is the diet that helped you similar in ways to the SCD?
Well, it's very similar. We've spoken about this before, and I left out a piece of this that departs from the specific carbohydrate diet. There are two things that I don't agree with. Number one, I don't agree with making your own dairy, and that's going to be okay. Dairy's not okay. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we do use white rice as a carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm. And the reason you use white rice, I mean, I've actually heard it said that if you're too severely restrict carbohydrates, you don't have enough food for the beneficial bacteria. Is that part of the rationale for using it?
Look, there are only three caloric bulk macronutrients, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats.
Uh-huh.
If you cut out all the grain carbohydrates, then you're left with fruits and vegetables, which many people with inflammatory bowel disease have issues with for a variety of reasons, which we can go into later. And then you have protein. So we're going to put these patients on a ketogenic diet so they can lose more weight. It doesn't make any sense to restrict all carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
So include rice.
So, in fact, you published on this in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition. A paper entitled Effective Exclusion Diet with Nutraceutical Therapy in Juvenile Crohn's Disease. And what you concluded, I mean, it's an amazing paper. It's there for all the world to see. Unfortunately, some people don't embrace it. What they found was that within 2 months of starting diet with nutritional therapy, all six out of six patients, these are pediatric patients, went into remission with discontinuation of all pharmacological drugs, and three of the six remained in sustained remission for 4 to 8 years. That's a pretty good track record. Wow.
Well, it's gotten even better because as time goes on, I find more and more nutrition applications that I didn't have several years ago. So this is an evolving science. Every day we learn something more about inflammatory bowel disease and nutrition. We're moving toward an era of personalized nutrition, personalized medicine. Well, frankly, I've been doing personalized nutrition for close to 50 years, perhaps even longer. It is possible to personalize for each patient. I know that I could not write down on one piece of paper all the things that everyone should do and just hand the paper out. It would not work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's not a one size fits all approach. It's approach to the,
not
I mean,
at
there's
all.
A general, there's a general template, but you adjust it for each individual circumstance. So for example, if a patient has a stricture, they may not be able to take certain bulky foods that might clog up the intestine. I mean, that's certainly a consideration, even if they're permitted foods. Obviously there's no one size fits all, but what's the basic premise behind the diet? I mean, it's a, Are you allowed protein, fat, some carbohydrates? What are the exclusions?
Well, we have to have more protein than average, perhaps 25% of the total caloric bulk macronutrients. We use the rice, as I said, to be able to maintain an energy substrate. When it comes to the fruits and vegetables, we either puree them for some people, or we put them through an Instapot because it becomes very important to deal with the lectins, mm-hmm. which we weren't that familiar with 25 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. When you look at the intestinal lumen and look at the brush border of the intestine, we're exposing that surface area to a variety of toxins, Giardia, Salmonella, etc. And we have 100 trillion microorganisms living in the bowel. Now, the average person has 10 million cells in their body, yet 10 times as many microorganisms. Those microorganisms can be modulated by the food that we eat. Mm-hmm. So that when we eat red meat, we're going to get support for a lot of nasty organisms. When we eat fruits and certain vegetables, we modulate toward a healthier microbiome. So it all starts at the brush border. And so now we have a diet that is just loaded with gluten. And I'm not one of those people that says everybody has to go on a gluten-free diet, but certainly we are getting more gluten than any human being should be eating these days. Mm-hmm. Each one of these things does affect the junctional proteins. Those junctional proteins are like magnets. We have one layer of cells separating the lumen, where the 100 trillion organisms are living, and the blood. And so when you start eating certain foods that promote inflammatory response, you start to get separation of those cells in the intestine. And the further that separation develops, the more of those things hit the bloodstream. And the next thing you know, you've got nutrient malabsorption, autoimmunity, food intolerance. You get blood-brain barrier breach. These patients have brain fog.
Mm-hmm. And systemic symptoms.
Systemic
arthritis.
Inflammation.
Yep.
So it's a cascade of pretty nasty things that can happen that can be modulated.
Indeed. And so what you want to do, I mean, borrowing from the title of Elaine Gottschall's book, you want to break the vicious cycle of bacterial proliferation, the proliferation of bacteria that signal to the intestinal immune system that they should elaborate inflammatory cytokines, which then further damage tissue and release humoral factors that literally digest away the intestinal wall and perpetuate damage and swelling and, you know, bleeding and the whole ball of wax that is involved in IBD.
It is a cycle of nastiness. That's about the only way I can describe it.
Indeed. So you embarked on this diet. The diet was essentially a grain-free diet, except you had rice. What about beans, potatoes, other sources of carbohydrates? Are they a no-no?
All right. Well, for normal people, beans are a challenge. Beans are also very high in lectins.
Lectins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so with beans, we don't have raffinase, the enzyme that would break that down. So the normal person is going to have some intestinal gas and expel it, and everything will be fine. The person with inflammatory bowel disease becomes very decompensated. When a person with inflammatory bowel disease lies down when there's gas in the bowel, that gas starts to move, and they're in a position where that gas can be expelled, which is a good thing. It feels good. But it wouldn't feel so good to your brother who might be sleeping in the same room with you, or your wife who's sleeping in the same bed with you. So these are foods that can really upset quality of life. And so my recommendation to anyone with inflammatory bowel disease is that while beans are an extraordinarily healthy food, particularly in the area of cancer chemo prevention, they're not so good in inflammatory bowel disease.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned meat as being a potentially inflammatory substance. Are you suggesting that people get their protein from lean meats or fish in preference to red meat, or is red meat part of that?
Red meat should be minimalized. It's a tough situation to be in because many of these patients are
anemic.
Deficient.
Yeah,
they're iron deficient. Mm-hmm. So wherever possible and wherever I can get a physician to, and so far I've had really no one argue with me about this, I would prefer to have an iron infusion.
Yeah, as opposed to taking oral iron, which is pro-inflammatory, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I try to avoid that.
Oral
too.
Iron will support the proliferation of adhesive inherent E. coli, and that's certainly a part of the problem here.
Mm-hmm. It feeds the bad bacteria. Okay.
Yep.
We've laid the groundwork for a discussion of strategies for treating inflammatory bowel disease naturally. And this does not mean eschewing conventional therapies, but perhaps they need to be there at the very least for as trainer wheels for a while the condition resolves. But the goal is to minimize medication if possible, get patients entirely off medication. And you've had many successes, especially with the pediatric population that you work with. They're unique. They come from all over the world. They don't hesitate to travel hundreds and perhaps thousands of miles to take advantage of your experience in treating kids with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. We're talking to Dr. Melvin Grovet. Dr. Grovet has a practice in your... Why don't we give out that information right now, and then we'll repeat it in part two. You still consult with patients. Do you still accept patients in New York?
Sure. Well, actually, my office is in White Plains now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A suburb of New York.
50 Main Street in White Plains.
Okay. All right. When we return, more specifics on the treatment of inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, especially in kids. We're talking to Dr. Mel Grovet. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.